This is the Kona Edge, the home of Ironman triathletes who dream of qualifying for the World Championships on the Big Island.
This is the Kona Edge. I'm Brad Brown, and what a pleasure to introduce our next guest to you. You may recall a few weeks ago here on the Kona Edge, we caught up with Hans Christian Tungesvik, who was, funnily enough, the first Norwegian that we had spoken to here on the podcast. And he mentioned a race in Norway called the Norseman. It is iconic race in Scandinavia, and it's fast becoming iconic on the global, on the international triathlon scene. It is brutal. It is magnificently beautiful. It is just stunning. If you haven't seen the videos for that yet, do yourself a favor and go check it out. But we have got the defending Norseman champion on today's podcast. He's a full-time engineer. He works like you and I for a living, but he is a monster when it comes to triathlon. And yeah, he's got a pretty cool story to share as well. So that's who we've got on the podcast today. Lance Petter Stormo, who we'll get on in just a moment. But don't forget as well, if you are enjoying the podcast, we'd love it if you left us a review or a rating on iTunes. I know I keep asking, and many of you have left reviews and ratings, but what it does is it just helps us get in front of more triathletes around the globe, just like you. And if you've got any value out of these podcasts, it's just something you can do that will help us immensely. And all you have to do is just leave a rating review. It doesn't take that long, just a couple of minutes, and it helps us out like you have no idea. And also, we sweeten the pot a bit. If you'd like to win yourself an entry into an Ironman, we're giving away another one this year. All you have to do is head over to thekoneedge.com/win. All the instructions are there. It does include leaving us a review on iTunes, but you can enter that contest there right now. That's thekoneedge.com/win. Let's get straight into today's interview. Welcome on to this edition of the Kona Edge, and we head to Norway once again. And I hate to say it, but it's a chilly Norway, a gorgeous Cape Town in South Africa where I am, and it's a great pleasure to welcome onto the podcast today Lars Petter Stormo. Lars Petter, welcome. Thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much. Thank you. I am envy of your weather down there.
I'm sure. But you did say to me before we started recording, you haven't had much snow, which is terrible. You obviously, you've grown up in Norway. You like the winters. I'm taking it. It's been a, I don't want to say a mild one, because it's cold anyway. But lots of snow means you get to go out and do lots of cross-country skiing, correct?
Yeah, that's what we normally do. And this winter has been just a few centimeters on and off. And then, nothing's fun. No cross-country skiing, no running outside. Yeah, poor biking, but we're getting there.
One of those things. Lars Petter, tell me a little bit about you as a person growing up. I mean, were you pretty sporty? What's your sort of sporting pedigree background? Where'd you come from?
I started as a kid. I did everything, but then when I was 13, I started mountain biking, and then that was what I did. I was on the national team in mountain biking for Norway from 1996 to 2002. And competed a lot, in Europe and US, and got pretty good results. But it's not easy living like a mountain biker. So after a couple of years just mountain biking, I started to study. And then I used 5 years to get my master's degree in construction engineering. And after that, I was just working 100% and did a lot of other things. I did still a lot of mountain biking, but it was more cross-country skiing, running, and then started doing triathlon in 2007.
As far as the mountain biking goes, what was it, cross-country? What was your sort of main discipline? What were you good at?
Yeah, it was cross-country, the Olympic discipline. That was before it came Olympic. So, but it was pretty good. I was around number 6 in Europe, so it was good, but... Yeah, it's hard living like mountain biker.
Hard living in what way? Tell me a little about what made it tough.
It's the financial part. I had the kind parents that supported me, but you don't earn a lot of money. Even if you're among the big best mountain bikers in Norway, you don't earn a lot of money. So I figured out after a couple of years that I had to start my studies.
And mountain bike is an interesting thing because the sport's grown a lot. It's going through a massive growth spree at the moment. Do you kind of almost feel you were maybe 10 or 15 years too soon when it came? I mean, if you were born 10, 15 years later, you might have had it slightly differently?
Probably. But then again, I missed out on the triathlon wave that's going on now and being taken part of that. So that was fun while it lasted, and I got some good results, and I'm happy with it.
Do you find now with the triathlon that you can almost, if you had any unfinished business with the mountain biking, you can almost do that in triathlon now, that it gives you the opportunity to compete at a high level, even though it's a different sport?
And I always liked competing, and I didn't quit mountain biking because I was tired of sports or tired of competing. I didn't see any future in mountain biking. So now I love competing, and that's what the age group competing in triathlon is all about. And then you can compete at more or less the same level. So I think it's very much fun.
Mountain biking, is it still part of your training regime now? Do you still ride much?
Yeah, especially now when we have bad winters, it's a lot of riding mountain biking with studded tires on the ice. So I do still train some mountain biking, but not competing that much, probably 2-3 races a year.
Did you take a bit of a break, I mean, from the competitive stuff? You mentioned that you decided from a financial point of view, mountain biking, there's no future there. You went and studied. Were you still training and competing as a student, or did you take a bit of a break and then come back?
No, I actually still competed, so it didn't bother me that I stepped down a level. I still was competing some, but then it was more competitions in running and cross-country skiing, because then and my level in biking has just gone down since 2002. So in other sports, I'm still progressing, so that's more fun. So then I've competed more in other sports.
Have you always been competitive? Did you have brothers and sisters growing up? Where did this competitive spirit in you come from?
Yeah, my big brother was the one that started mountain biking. So then I had to join as well. So we have always competed. And I just love the aspect of competitions. I love the tactical parts and where to attack and when to stay calm and that kind of stuff. I love it.
But between yourself and your brother, who's the better mountain biker?
Now or then?
It's supposed to be you all the time, Lars Petter.
I caught him. He was 3 years older, so it took some years, but then we were pretty much on the same level on the national team together. But then he, after we stopped the mountain biking, he hasn't been that active as I have. So now I guess I'm a bit better.
Awesome. Well, tell me about how the triathlon bug sort of came about and how you discovered that and when, like, I mean, talk to me about how that came and got onto your radar.
Yeah, it was actually my best friend who in 2006, he competed in the Norseman Extreme Triathlon. That was really small back then, and I haven't heard of it before. So then he competed, and he came second. And then I thought, maybe I should try the Norseman. So I did it in 2007, and then I won it. So that was a cool start. And I did one other triathlon that year as well. That was the national championships in the long distance triathlon. And I came second in Norway, to championships in Norway then. So it was a good start. But then the Norseman is really hard, especially mentally. So I guess after 1 year, I needed to go back to mountain biking. And it took 5 years again before I again did a triathlon. And that was in 2012. And then again, it was Norseman. So that has been my main entrance to the competition, because that's so big in Norway. Mm.
We spoke about the Norseman a few weeks ago here on the Cone Edge. We had one of your countrymen on, and he was talking about it. It's a phenomenal race, and it's as you say, it's big in Norway. It's starting to gain international sort of fame. I think more and more internationals are trying to get entries. It's just an incredible race, isn't it?
Yeah, it's awesome. And now the last couple of years, it's been more foreign applicants to get a slot than Norwegians. So it's crazy how big it has become. And yeah, of course, for Norwegians, that's the big thing. That what's if you're doing triathlon, everyone asks, have you done the Norseman?
You're not a real triathlete unless you've done the Norseman.
No, pretty much so in Norway. Even if we got Blumenfeld, who's doing amazing in the Olympic distance, still a lot of the older or more just doing it for fun, they look at Norseman as the big deal.
You mentioned how tough it is mentally. I mean, it's physically tough. Yeah. There's no two ways about it either. I mean, physically, it's probably one of the hardest around, just because of how it finishes. I mean, the run starts, first half is flat, and then you just go straight up. Mentally, how do you prepare for something that hard?
You have to prepare yourself really well, because you know you're going to be in a lot of pain for a really long period of time, and it's going to get freezing cold, because you get all kinds of weather. And you will get cold, and you will be in a lot of pain. And I know physically it's the run part is hard, but I personally would think that I feel a flat Ironman marathon is harder on the legs. The last climb on Norseman is a really mental part. The guy who's the strongest mentally and has done his nutrition part good, he will do well in the last climb. So it's more mental part to last 2-3 hours than in a normal Ironman.
As much as the conditions on race day are very different between the Norseman and Kona, do you think that the mental preparation of having performed well at the Norseman prepared you for what was to come in Kona?
Yeah, kind of. But again, I messed it up a little bit in Kona, so I wasn't that well prepared. But the hard weather conditions, of course, that's something you have to be mentally prepared for. And also the hard course, because the Kona course is also much harder than I had thought it would be.
And the weather on the Big Islands, I mean, was that something that really troubled you? Coming from a country like Norway where it can get brutally cold, the heat and humidity from Kona, it's almost the total opposite to what you're used to.
Yeah, it is. But then again, I spend a lot of time on Mallorca, the island, training. And in the summer, it can get 35 to 40 degrees Celsius there. And I like training in the heat, so that's not a big issue. It's I can handle the different kind of weather pretty good. So that was actually kind of okay on Kona as well. I didn't feel that it was that hot. But you have to be there a couple of weeks to get used to it. The first week it felt very hard.
Which one's harder, Norseman or Kona?
Kona. I would think. Because I've done the Norseman so many times now, and I know that race and know how to prepare. So for me, it's not that hard anymore. But again, from a guy that's coming from a warm climate, Norseman is extremely hard.
Mm. Well, Peter, looking at Norseman and the iconic status that it has in Norway, when did Kona become something that you decided you wanted to chase? Was it early on in your triathlon career?
No, because then in the start of my career, it was just small races in Norway and the Norseman. So it was first in 2015, I did my first Ironman, then I did a couple of 70.3. And also, I won my age group there, so that was a lot of fun. And then I qualified for the World Championships in Selamsee. And then last year, in 2016, was the first time I did my full distance Ironman, or my full distance flat Ironman distance at all. In this, so it was my first year last year that I thought of that Kona could be a cool thing to do.
You mentioned Nice. That is one of the toughest Ironmans from particularly the bike. It's very, very hard. And coming from a mountain bike background, you've obviously got to play to your strengths. And you're used to hard bike courses and suffering. So is that the way you choose races? You go, you know, let's look at the calendar and look what's got the hardest bike. Let's go do that one.
Yeah, a little bit of both, because both me and my wife wanted to try to qualify for Kona. And that's why we picked Nice, both because it's a hard bike course and also because it's a beautiful course. Yeah, it's a really nice place to compete, so it was a bit of both. But the good background from biking helped me both in the climbs and mainly in the descents, actually.
Okay.
Because yeah. my mountain bike backgrounds makes me a good bike handler, and some or most triathletes aren't, so I can gain a lot of time on the downhills.
It's interesting you say that, because that course in Nice particularly, I think it's the last 30Ks, is quite a yeah. it's quite a technical descent back into transition. You must have been able to yeah. make up a lot of time there.
Yeah, more time there than in the uphills. So, and it doesn't cost me any strength, so it's I'm gaining time without using any energy on it.
You want to try and
suits me well.
You want to try and find a mountain bike course that's 180Ks of that descent.
Yeah, that would be nice. It would be fun.
I'll put money on you to win it. You'll definitely win it. There's no two ways about it. Last minute, let's talk about the preparation for Kona as opposed to something like Nice or Norseman as an example. I mean, Nice, obviously the time of the year, it can get quite warm as well, but did you do anything different in the build-up to Kona than you would normally?
I tuned in my equipment quite a lot. I normally use in a black suit on the racing, a bike suit, and I had changed that with a white one. That had more aerodynamic materials and also was good in the heat. And I also tuned in my bike a little bit because I had the setup was for Norseman, and in Norseman it's a lot of climbing. So I lowered my handlebars a bit and used some time to get into the new position, because I knew on Kona it's all about aerodynamics, a little bit different from Norseman. So I used some time on that. And also the nutrition part I had to work on, because in Norseman we have support that can give us nutrition all the time. But in Kona you are more self-sufficient. So that was also something I had to prepare for.
You said you didn't have the best of Kona's experiences, and the race didn't quite go according to plan. Tell me a little bit about your race. What happened?
It was actually a really good day for me, and the swim was very good. I was on 58 minutes, and that was good for me. And then the bike was, I felt super strong, maybe a little bit too strong, because I felt to avoid drafting, I had to go really hard the first hour to get past the big groups, because I didn't want to get stuck behind and risk to get a penalty. So I guess the first hour on the bike was too hard, even if it felt pretty easy. I see now that I had the first 50Ks, I was a bit about a minute faster than Frodeno. I guess that was a little bit too fast. But it felt good. All the bike felt pretty good, actually. And the last 20Ks was hard because we get a headwind. And my plan was to take it easy last 20Ks, but that's hard when I get that headwind. But after the bike, I was I hoped to get under 9 hours, the result in the end. And when I was finished with the bike, I was well ahead of my plan. But then I guess I was too eager. It went so well that I was too eager to get in the top age group overall. And I started the first 10Ks on Ali Drive too fast, ran too fast, and I hit the wall when I got up to Queen K. Then it was all over for the first time. And then I took some time and drank a lot of Coke and gathered myself again. But then when I got to the Energy Lab, it was no more. So then I had a really hard time back on the Queen K. So I blew up on the run.
And the mental side of it, so obviously you mentioned the mental aspect of Norseman. Did that come into play on race day? Do you think that helped you, having that background?
Yeah, I think so. Because I'm pretty good at just sticking to my own plan and just doing the intensity I'm going to ride on and the intensity I'm going to run on. But then again, on Kona, I was, after the good result in Nice, I knew I could win my age group if I had a good day, and I got too focused on that when I went out on the run. So I should have just kept to my plan and ran the pace I was supposed to run on instead of chasing the first position. So I guess that was my biggest mistake, that I I forgot to focus just on myself, and I focused on the result.
Looking back at it now, I mean, what would you have done differently? Looking now that you've analyzed the race, how would you have changed it on race day?
I would have been more patient, especially a little bit more patient on the bike, the first 100Ks probably. But again, it's hard when it's the big groups. You have to get past them. And then just passing one big group can take 10 minutes. So that's something you have to take during the competition, how you will pace you on the bike. But especially the first 10 to 15Ks on the run, I should have been much more patient. Probably should have ran on a 4:20 per kilometer instead of below 4 minutes per kilometer as I did.
The big groups in Kona 2016, I think that was one of the big talking points that came out of the race. There were lots of photos doing the rounds of big groups, and unfortunately it is something that the organizers need to deal with. Is it possible to fix it? As a race organizer, what do you do?
But I didn't think that Kona had the big drafting issues. The big issue is that the level is so high that the groups get really big. And on Queen K, you have these reflectors on the side of the road, and the distance between those reflectors are the drafting distance. So it's very easy to keep your distance, and I felt like the big groups also was very good at keeping distance, so I didn't think it was a big drafting issue. Of course, there are always some that draft, but that wasn't a big issue. But when everyone is keeping the correct distance, there's no way you can get into a group if you are passing. So you have to pass the whole group. And that was the hardest part. When there are 50 guys in one line and there's no room to get in there, you have to pass the whole group, and that costs a lot of energy.
Yeah, it is a tough one. One of the other things that's starting to pop up on the sort of radar in the sport, and it's sad, I know it's something that's plagued cycling for a long, long time, is the doping issue. Lars Petter, what's your take on doping? I mean, I look at people who draft, and you're always going to get it. That's the sad thing, and it's the same thing with doping. It's something that the sport just can't have. What's your sort of thought when it comes to doping and cheating in the sport?
Cheating is always a hopeless thing, and I never understood it, because if you can't win fair, there's no point in racing at all. So, and it's the same with drafting. You see the guys that try to use every possibility to get something for free. That's wrong. Of course, you can have an accident and get too close and get a penalty. That's part of the game. But if you do it on purpose, I think it's a no-go. And same with doping. I don't understand, especially the age group guys who do it. That's just silly.
Do you think they need to test more in the age groupers? Is it something that they're not testing enough?
I don't know how much they are testing. On Kona, I was tested, and a couple of other age groupers as well, I saw. So that was good that they are there and picking up random tests when we are registering. But of course, if it's becoming more and more a big problem, they have to test much more.
Absolutely. You mentioned the race didn't go quite according to plan. You are very competitive. I'm guessing you feel there's unfinished business on the Big Island?
Yeah. I'm trying to get back there this year. I learned a lot, so I hope I can race much smarter if I get back there this year.
From a preparation perspective, I'm guessing you feel you did everything you could do from a preparation. It was just down to execution on race day?
Yeah. I was very well prepared, and I felt I did everything as planned, and everything worked out as I had hoped. It was just my head that screwed up the whole thing. So I have to be much smarter.
How frustrating is it that it was a race like Kona, and particularly an Ironman? If you do that, you don't get lots of opportunities to race big races like that.
No.
In order to go and fix that problem, you've got to wait. You can't go back a week later and try it again.
Yeah, but Kona last year was a bit of a bonus for me. My main goal last year was Norseman, which I won, so I was kind of happy with the season anyway, and Ironman Nice went very, very well, and so of course I was hoping for a good result in Hawaii, but I'm happy that my preparations were good and that my shape is good. So if I get back there, I know much more now. So I'm much smarter. So you learn from everything, and that's just part of the game.
Talking about learning, if you could go back and start your triathlon career over, what would you tell yourself? What would you do differently? Is there anything you would do differently?
Yeah, I would start to swim when I was a kid. Because that's the hardest part when you come from another background. It's just starting to swim from scratch. It takes a lot of time. And so I guess starting to swim early is the main thing that I have lost by doing something else for so many years.
So what you're saying is, if there's parents that listen to this and they want their kids to become really good triathletes, they got to get them in the water when they can. When they can't even walk, they need to be swimming.
Yeah. Because if you learn to swim correct when you're a kid, you gain from that your whole life, and you can learn to run and to bike, but the swimming is it takes time, and you should learn it when you're young.
There's lots of new triathletes that listen to the Kona Edge that are thinking about doing their first Ironman or are training to do their first Ironman. You're very experienced. You've done multiple of these sort of distance races. What advice would you give to someone who's an out-and-out newbie in the sport and trying to find their way?
Train smart. Don't listen to everyone. Just pick out some advices and go for that. And learn to know yourself and your strengths and your weaknesses. And just trust yourself. Make a plan for each race and stick to the plan. You can't do anything about the competitors. You have to just trust yourself. And especially when it comes to the nutrition and the intensity on the bike and the run, you have to have a plan and stick to the plan.
It's interesting that first point you made about finding someone who can help you. I think finding help is very important, but finding one person that you can buy into their philosophy. I think in the day and age that we live in with the internet, there's just so much information, and yeah. I think a lot of people make that mistake, is where they pick and choose pieces. They take something here that they like, something there that they like, and that doesn't necessarily work. You've got to sell out to one person and give it a bash that way.
Yeah, I think so, and especially you see the internet forums and people discussing, and it's a lot of good ideas, but then you have to be a bit realistic and just not try everything at once. You can try 1 year, you can try one thing, and if it doesn't feel that works for you, you can tweak it a little bit, but don't try. Give one program a shot before you put everything else in it.
I like to think of it as a buffet. When you eat at a buffet, there's lots of different things. You don't put everything on your plate. You take what you like and try that. So I think that's some great advice. You also mentioned that your wife is a fairly competitive triathlete. What's it like living with another type A personality who also races hard?
I think I couldn't have done what I do if my wife didn't do the same thing, because then we have the same interest and we do the same races and we can train. I think 80-90% of my training I do together with my wife, and that's a good thing, because it wouldn't have worked, or because that's what we do in our spare time, is train or compete.
Tell me a little bit about her and her sort of exploits. In order to train with you, she must be pretty good too.
Yeah, she's pretty good. She was seventh in the Norseman Extreme Triathlon last year and fourth in Ironman Nice. So she's very good, and she's hoping for a slot to Kona as well. But it's for women, it's so hard to get the slots because there are so few slots in their categories. And that's a bit sad because there are very much good women out there who deserve to get a spot on the Kona. And they have to pick their races much more carefully than we guys do, because sometimes we have a lot of slots, but they only have 2-3 almost every race.
Looking at sort of people you admire in the sport, who are some of the athletes that you look up to and sort of aspire to be like?
I haven't been in the circus that long, so I don't know that many, but I think it's really inspiring to look at Kienle, who's the great biker and puts his heart on the line every time. And of course, Frodeno and Daniel Arif, they are true champions. And actually, the thing that Daniel Arif does is amazing. She's so strong, and it's hard to believe the times that she puts in.
Yeah, she's a machine. There's no two ways about it. Absolutely. Yeah. What's next on the cars for Lars Petter Stormo?
Now we are going to Ironman South Africa in just over a month. So hoping to secure the Kona slot there. And then we are doing the 70.3 on Mallorca. We do that almost every year because it's a great venue and a great race. And then we do the Ironman Austria in Klagenfurt. That's a fast course, so I hope to set a good time there. And then again, it's Norseman in August. And then hopefully Hawaii in October. So it's a long season and a lot of long-distance races.
Yeah, it's interesting. You talk about a long season and lots of races. How many do you think you can physically do and be your best at? I mean, it's easy to go and race lots, but you want to be at a certain level. What do you think is the right number for you?
I think I can do 3, maybe 4 big races and do well in all of them. Now this year, Ironman Austria and Norseman, they are a bit tight. So I actually hope to do very well in Austria in the start of July. And then 1 month later, I have Norseman. So I hope to cruise on the shape that I get from Austria into Norseman. But those two are a bit too close that I can peak in both of them.
Obviously, a very busy travel schedule as well. Tell me what you do for a living and how you fund this triathlon addiction of yours.
I work full time as a construction engineer. So all our vacations goes to these races. And if we get to Hawaii, we have to take some free without pay, both me and my wife, to get there because we don't have that much vacation. It's so much fun, and we get so many experiences from the racing abroad. So it's just something we love to do. And, of course, we have sponsors in Oslo Sportslager in Norway that support us. And that helps a lot, of course.
Absolutely. Well, Lars Petter, thank you so much for your time here on the Kona Edge today. I look forward to getting you back on to talk a little bit about your swim, your bike, your run, and your nutrition. But we'll save that for another day. Thanks for your time.
Yeah, perfect. Thank you.
We hope you enjoyed this episode of the Kona Edge. Don't forget to connect with us on social media. Simply search for the Kona Edge.